All of the food we eat and much of the clothing we wear comes from plants and animals that are raised on farms. Farms are different in type, in size, and even in name.
Welcome to Barn Talk. What happens at the barn stays in the barn, but not today. We're going to let it all out for you guys. It's time for some Q&A. We are 93 episodes in, and we still have more questions than we do have answers. So it is what it is. No rest for the wicked, and the righteous don't need it. So we're going to get into it. Before we do, though, you guys know the drill. If you're new here, we have a thing called paying the fee. It's pretty much the ticket to admission to watch or listen to the show, and it is sharing the show. If you got any value, if we made you laugh, if we made you think, if you're related to us on something, all we ask is you guys share the show out with anybody that you think might get some value out of it too. You could also leave a review on Spotify or Apple, and we're up to 1.5 five-star reviews on Spotify, and we're almost to 600 five-star reviews on Apple. So thank you to all that have been paying the fee or leaving reviews. If you guys want to submit questions for Q&A episodes like today's episode, you can submit your questions at barntalkshow@gmail.com. That's where we'll get them. That's where we'll get our answers for them. And that's the best way you can reach us. It's a pretty nice morning this morning. Nice and it's not 56. Too hot. 56. Starting to feel like fall. My favorite season of the year. And I'm kind of a little grimy this morning. I got up toward the pigs, haven't brushed my teeth, smell like hog shit. So you're getting the raw version of Sawyer here today. What about you?
Better off not knowing that.
Well, that's all right. I just
good
wanted
thing
to,
we have our distance.
I had to get it out for them so they know if they see some yellow teeth that they give me some grace a little bit. But I had my coffee, so that kind of stains your teeth after a while. But
I know I might have to look into getting some Ultra Bright or something.
Yes.
The coffee's taking its toll.
What are those, Ventaneers or?
Veneers.
Veneers? You going to get some veneers?
I don't think so.
That's becoming like a trend for people. I mean, I think it's more like guys in LA or whatever that are influencers.
Yeah.
But isn't that just, you're going to have to replace them, aren't you? I think that you have to replace them after like 10 years. And it's like, that's not really worth it to me.
Okay, for my 83rd birthday, you can get me
Years. Almost to the finish line.
Yep, so I'll look good in my casket.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll get veneers and I'll get a nip and a tuck and I'll get some collagen.
Yep.
And they can stitch in my eyelashes, whatever. I'll get the whole package. So that when people come, they'll be like, damn, I can't believe he died. He looks so good.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
There you go. Yeah, I'll make sure to have that all written down for when the time comes.
You ain't
going to
do that. You're not going to want to spend the money. You and your brother are going to be like, he doesn't know the difference.
Well,
just roll him in the ditch.
Well, you either get that or a really nice casket. Which one do you want?
I just want to make sure when I'm laying there, make sure that I'm giving everybody the double thumbs up.
You want your eyes open?
Maybe they can make it that I'm winking.
Yeah.
I'm giving the double thumbs up and I'm winking. And don't forget, for all of you out there that are listening, when I do pass, make sure my kids remember I want a Mardi Gras band leading me to the cemetery.
You want it to be a celebration, not a sad day.
Yeah, because people have these deals and it's a celebration of life, but it's not truly a celebration, so I'm going to have...
You want it to be a party.
Yeah. And see if you can get that Cajun cook guy off TikTok that's you can't hardly understand, you know?
Oh, put it on a cracker.
The giant pot.
Yeah.
Oh, now put that on a cracker now?
Yeah. You want him there?
Yeah.
Okay.
The list gets longer and longer. We better get after it.
Well,
if we're gonna make that all happen,
yeah, we gotta get some sponsors, maybe, or sell more boxes of meat.
Sell more meat, absolutely.
That's all we gotta do.
Hey, you left it out amongst all our, you know, thank you for all the reviews and the questions, but I never would have thought that Barn Talk would have the following that it does. And on YouTube, we are almost 100,000 subscribers on YouTube. And that is just crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Pretty sweet.
Thank you from the bottom of our hearts because, you know, it goes without saying that that's all you guys. We couldn't do it without you, but that's an amazing when that happens. Maybe we'll have a Mardi Gras party just for that.
That's right.
We should have a shrimp boil, a crawfish boil. Get a hold of them boys that ship the crawfish and we'll...
We is in a crawfish company.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We need to do that. Summer's almost over.
I know.
It was 56 this morning, but it's supposed to be 93 by, I don't know, Sunday, something like that. So that's fall's not here yet.
That's Iowa for you.
Yep, absolutely.
Got a market update for us?
I do. Hot off of the interweb. This is the close yesterday, so I don't know what we're doing this morning. Actually, I do. Corn's up. Everything's up a little bit this morning. Corn 528 local. I should say it's 464 on the board, and it might be a penny or two higher than that. Locally 528, and Eddyville, Iowa has a hot bid of 557. I think that's good till the 25th. Beans 1323 on the board, 1363 in Burlington, and 1388 if you want to take a trip to Illinois. Wheat 598, hog 7820. So that's an inside joke. So we literally, when we purchased the pigs for farmer grade, we picked the absolute high of the fall.
Worst time to buy them.
And they hogs worked all the way up to the day we shipped them, and then they've dropped ever since. So next batch, be better on the pocketbook. Cattle 179, feeder cattle 245. September crude oil is $81. Bitcoin, $30,000. Bitcoin just, it doesn't know what to do, so it just doesn't do anything. I've never seen a tighter trading range on Bitcoin, I don't think, than where it is right now. I mean, it literally is fluctuating less than $100 a day sometimes. Ethereum, $1,830. Tesla, $232. It's been down for, I don't know, long time. I think it got up to 260 something, maybe. Maybe it got higher than that. I can't remember. Right before the annual report or the second quarter report, it worked up high. But I really haven't been paying attention, but 232. Gold, $1,933, and silver, $20.67. And I throw that in there because somebody asked us a question about precious metals, so I figured I would give you that. That is the market report.
You got Maui's real estate? Update. What's that going for now? Pennies on the dollar.
Pennies on the dollar, but I don't think anybody's going to get a chance to buy any because it sounds like the governor of Hawaii, he would like to take all that property off the hands of the owners out of the goodness of his heart and reimagine that neighborhood into a smart neighborhood.
That's what he said.
He came out last night.
I saw Oprah Winfrey's been buying up land in Maui for a while, a lot of property. It's awfully weird that fire started there, and I don't know, something fishy's going on, it seems like, because everybody's talking about it, and they say that the government's not, and the media isn't covering it for whatever reason, and I've seen TikToks of people that live in Maui say what they're telling you isn't the truth, and some people are saying that it might have been done intentionally so that the people that have been living there for however long they've been living there, they're getting them out of there by, quote unquote, and this is not me saying this, this is just what I've seen, intentionally starting a fire and having destruction so that they can step in and develop it and make it a smart community or whatever.
I think any new land purchases that Oprah makes, she should have to have a cage match against Roseanne Barr. Get it, because Roseanne lives down there in Hawaii.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she lives in Hawaii. So I think that should be, as soon as Elon and Mark's over, we'll throw Oprah and Roseanne in, let them go after it.
That would be really entertaining.
I don't think that would be as exciting. I think
the trash talk would be the best part from Roseanne.
Oh, I think Roseanne could make Oprah cry.
Probably. Yeah. You know, I've always wanted to go to Hawaii because people say it's great, and they say go before it's ruined because it's like every freaking nice place in this country. California used to be the sunshine state, and everybody said go to California. Now you couldn't pay me to go to California. I have no desire, and hopefully Hawaii doesn't go downhill after.
Well, a good friend of yours literally was in Maui because I saw a picture. Yeah. he was there just like it had to have been a week before that happened.
My good buddy Kiowa helps us with some editing for the podcast. Yeah, he was just there and he said it was beautiful. And yeah, it was right before all this happened. And he said it was beautiful. He just said it's expensive. He had a lot of fun stuff to do, but like even a simple chicken finger basket's like $20.
Yeah.
It's like crazy. So they probably know who's a tourist and who's not down there.
Well, I think everything's high. Yeah. I think that's part of the deal with
And I'm sure they probably import a lot of stuff.
Oh, a lot.
Yeah.
So that's part of the problem is the people that live there that are original residents, this fire, the problem is their property values are outrageous. So that if you're somebody and you owned a house there for 30 years, your house is worth an amazing amount of money, but your cost of living is so high. And it's kind of like when California was at the height. Okay, the only way you can make that work that you put any money in your pocket is if you literally cash out. In other words, you sell that property and you leave Hawaii. Because if you sell that property to buy anything else, what you're going to buy is more, it's just exponentially is not the right word, but it's super expensive anywhere you go. So you really don't, you're not going to get ahead. So the people that have all this, have this property, they're just regular people. So their cost of living is so high that the only way they can really profit from that is to cash in and leave. Mm. So that's why it's not good.
No, nope, it's not good.
So,
yeah, I don't know. We don't know everything about it. I've looked into it a little bit and just seen some stuff on Twitter, but I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it.
Joe Biden didn't have any feelings about it whatsoever until the polls got bad enough. And yesterday he came out and had a lot of remorse about it.
Mm.
It took him about a week, but he feels bad now.
Well, that's so good.
That's the important thing.
That's right.
He might have just actually realized that Hawaii was a state. He might have thought that it was part of New Zealand or something.
Well, maybe they would have gotten more aid faster if it was foreign, because the way we've been handing Ukraine money, it seems like we have, you know, we give a shit more about foreign relations than we do our own state.
Well,
so
we're kind of coming out guns blazing.
Well, I know this isn't even a hot topic, but yeah. I just figured I'd throw that in there. If you're heading to Decatur, Illinois for the Farm Progress Show, you won't want to miss out on an exciting event hosted by the Propane Education and Research Council and SUCUP. Make plans to stop by SUCUP's booth on Wednesday, August 30th at 10 a.m. for the Ag Influencer Exchange Forum. You'll be able to share ideas, forge connections, and learn all about how propane is revolutionizing the ag industry.
The discussion will include special guests, Shark Farmer, Discover Ag, Modern Day Farm Wife, Farm for Profit, and yours truly, Barn Talk, This'll Do Farm. We'd love for you to stop by and join the discussion. See you there. Now, let's get back to it.
We'll get into the Q&A. So, I wanted to start it off with, you know, last week's episode, we talked about RFK Jr.'s stance on just the meat industry, and he really specifically talked about hog production and hog farming here in America, and we just gave our thoughts about it and what we kind of thought of when we listened to that. And I just wanted to say, because I saw some comments, I'm just kind of going off of your guys' feedback. Thank you for your feedback. No matter who commented what, we appreciate it. We might not agree on everything, but that's what makes this this show special. That's what makes America great. We can agree to disagree. But I would just want to say, and anybody that's been listening for a little bit, you know that out of all the Democratic candidates, we think that RFK Jr. is probably the best out of all the Democratic candidates. And people were commenting that like we didn't think that. We do think that. He is old school kind of Democrat, which is refreshing to see for the Democratic Party. You know, that hasn't happened in a long time. Usually every candidate's a crazy, at this point in the game, they're a crazy left woke socialist all the way left, and they're not really common sense much. He is that. And this was just one subject that we didn't agree with him on. And a lot of you said, well, get him on the show and talk to him about it. He seems like a reasonable guy. If you talk to him about it, he might be more open and receptive to listening to you about it. We'd love to have him on. Don't get it twisted. We'd love to get him on. It's just, how can we get him on? You know, it's not easy to get people here in Southeast Iowa, but we're going to try. And if you guys want to help us with that, the more you guys comment, go on Barn Talk to RFK Jr., the more he might be open to coming on the show. So that's what I wanted to say. And a lot of people also mentioned, I actually have a question here on my phone from the episode. We were talking about, you know, something that we said. I'll just read the question. You guys kept saying that although you all are a part of the current food production process, there are middle grounds and changes that could be made to make the system better. What are those changes? I mean, we touched on it on that podcast. And we don't have all the answers, but just from our experience, I believe that supporting the American farmer that's trying to be an independent and selling direct to consumer, supporting the small American butcher shop and not supporting the big conglomerate packers is a really good step. I also think farmers and butcher shops that aren't the big time players to get an advantage for us, we got to show people what we do. And that can really, those are kind of the two main things that I wanted to touch on of how we can make change. I think as an industry, whoever you are raising livestock or just producing food, show people what you're doing, because for a long time we've sucked at showing people the reality of farming and how farming's evolved and changed. And for too long we've let entities tell that story for us, and they've done a poor job of doing it, or they're on the other side of food in general or meat, and they hate meat, and they'll tell our story for us, and most of the time it's always in a bad light. So we got to counteract that and show them what we do, why we do it, how we do it. There's, you know, obviously reasons to why we do what we do and why we do it where we're at. And then I say the same thing can apply to butcher shops. You know, the big players in packing aren't showing their day to day for whatever reason. So American butcher shops, family butcher shops, they should be showing, you know, what they're doing. A good example of this is the Bearded Butchers on YouTube. They do a fantastic job of showing people, you know, how you process a pig and showing every intricate detail to processing animals, which is really, really cool. And I just think, you know, establishing that connection between the consumer, the butcher shop, and the farmer is really, really important. That will instill trust in the food system, which I think people are really lacking nowadays. Just because they don't know and we're not shown enough. And then, I talked about voting with your dollars, you know, and I know that's not the only factor that plays into this, but it really does matter. It does matter a lot. What you guys choose to spend your money on for food matters. And if you support local restaurants that are supporting local farmers, and you're supporting local farmers by buying directly from them, or you're supporting the butcher shop that's, you know, has their own products in store, you know, all that stuff, that matters. And that's going to go a long ways, and that's going to change the food system from being, you know, huge packers owning majority of the market share to, you know, if everybody makes a conscious decision like, hey, we're willing to pay a little bit more, but we're going to support local farmers, or we're going to support family farmers that are selling direct to consumer, and we're going to support the butcher shops that have their own products in store, that can go a long ways.
I just want to touch on that in that when we say, you know, vote with your dollars, the current situation as far as packers, and I don't know if I did a good enough job getting through this. There were some things that I skipped over when we were on the whole Smithfield discussion, but this consolidation that we see today, so pretty much you have Smithfield, you have Tyson, you have Triumph, and you have the Prestige plant that is vertically integrated. I can't remember if I'm and you have JBS, which bought Cargill. Okay, out of those, the only American owned ones are Tyson, Triumph, and Prestige. And that didn't happen overnight. So when we talk about voting with your dollars, when I was going through the list of everything that Smithfield bought, just about every one of those systems that they purchased, those people were distressed. Like when they bought Rath, when they bought, I can't even remember all of them. They either bought them out of bankruptcy or they were headed to bankruptcy, like Farmland Foods. So Farmland Foods had a plant in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. It closed. And they bought them. And the reason they were able to buy them is because there's such a little margin. And I feel like it's probably still that thin. However, all of these guys have used technology and their supply chain management is so much better. And specialize in brands and learning what they can make money exporting has all helped them. But the margin in the meat business has traditionally been terrible. And that led to consolidation because the only way they could make money was volume, because your percentage, your margin was so thin, and the consumer votes with their pocketbook. So that it is, that's not 100%, but it is, because people, when they're standing there in the line, ultimately you're pretty much selling a commodity. So this pork chop versus this pork chop. So the consumer really has to want to buy the story or buy a different value proposition to spend that money to get it. And so that's how we got there. And it's not going to change overnight unless people are willing to see value in shopping local, shopping small, buying direct to consumer, whatever it is. Just because food is one of the biggest things you're going to spend your money on. So that budget that you've got every week, you've got a lot of moms out there that are making a decision, what am I going to buy? And you're going to try to get the most for your dollar. So it is very much about voting with your dollars. If we want to spin ourselves out of the system that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that's my 5 cents on that.
There's also probably some changes that we're not hitting on, and I don't want to go too long on this subject, but to me, those are the two big ones that we could really try to make happen. And whether in that, it doesn't matter what farming practices you do, regardless, or what butcher shop type you are, regardless, just telling your story of how you farm or how you process animals, that matters. It doesn't matter how you do it. Just if you're showing it, there's all different ways we're doing things around here in this country as far as raising livestock or producing food. So just getting the consumer educated and building a brand and marketing your own product and supporting those kind of entities is, I think, a good thing. I think that'd be a good thing. So
since we're kind of on the subject of farming and raising animals and all that, so our first question came from LinkedIn. And Matthew asked, do hog farmers feed their pigs expired candy and bakery products? What's in pig feed? And that's a great question. So in the system that we're in, we don't feed any like candy or expired bakery or anything like that. And really, I don't know how prevalent that is. About a year or two ago, another Smithfield story, there was a story that came out that there was a feed mill down in North Carolina that was making feed, and I don't know if it was owned by Smithfield or if it was a contract mill for Smithfield, and they were feeding bakery product. In other words, they were getting like, I don't know if they were getting Little Debbie snack cakes or if they were getting out-of-date bread and rolls and that stuff. But they were basically taking that and grinding it into a product that you could blend that was when you take all that and you grind it up, you can take a sample and you can get a percentage of how much protein, how much what's the salt content, what's the sugar content, all that stuff. You can pretty much get it to where it's an average analysis that if you're making a diet to feed pigs or poultry or beef or whatever, and you need a protein or you need this, you can buy that product. Well, what was happening was in any system, the lowest paid employee is as important or more important than the highest one. So there was a guy working at the mill. Actually, he was working at the center, wherever they were getting all this bakery, and he was putting it in where they grind it. And he wasn't taking the wrappers off the snack cakes. He was just dumping them in and grinding it. So you've heard about this, what do they call it, plastics. You know, plastics are so prevalent in our environment that, you know, they're in the ocean and they're in people from throwing cans and wrappers and everything in the ditch. They're getting into the environment. Well, they were dumping this stuff in and grinding it, and it was going in the hog feed. Well, it was causing all kinds of problems, but then also they were finding traces of plastic in the meat at the packing plant. And I don't think that's something that we probably, I don't know if we've ever talked about this, but these packing plants, they're sampling, they're checking for everything because they're very, very conscious about the quality of the product they put out, because you can process 20,000 pigs a day and they're perfect. And, you know, you're shipping out millions of pounds of bacon a year, and you can ship out 1 million pounds of bacon and nobody says boo. You can ship out 1 pound of bacon where there is something in that pack. There is a piece of plastic in that pack, or there is a piece of metal in that pack, or there is something. And that one pack is going to be all over the national news, and everybody's going to know about it, and you are going to get run through the... So these packers, regardless of, you know, who they are, they're very diligent, and they spend... I've been through probably 4 packing plants in my time throughout the industry. And the level of, I don't know what you want to call, not the level of food security that goes into them is amazing. Anyway, they caught this. So all of that to say, that became a big deal. It became a national story. And of course, it couldn't happen to a worse bunch than Smithfield, because, you know, they're fighting an uphill battle anyway. But that was an example where, you know, I'm sure they had all these protocols of what should be done and how they should use it. And it all comes down to the guy that's actually standing there dumping the raw product in. And he obviously didn't care. I mean, he just plain didn't care, and he didn't have any supervision. And that's what happened. So there is a product called Bakery that there are companies that make ingredients and they sell it. And it's a guaranteed, you know, it's supposed to be this for sugar, protein, whatever. But basically hog feed, ground corn, soybean meal, salt, and then what we would call a micro pack of the vitamins and minerals that the pigs need. Depending on the age of the pig, you might have a little bit of fat in there. Because both for dust control and for taste. But as far as Bakery goes, usually if you were going to use anything like that, it would be in a starter ration. It would be for when the pigs are little and you're feeding like maybe some milk product, or you're feeding some rolled oats, something like that. But we, as far as I know, we don't feed any Bakery in the diets that, you know, go to the pigs we're feeding right now. And cost-wise, it's just very unusual. The economics of making a ton of feed, it has to be advantageous to buy that product. So I'd say it's very rare. And I don't know anybody that's using candy. I don't know anybody.
Well, yeah, and in that story, what came out of that, and what sprung from that outrage of that guy doing that for that feed mill, people started saying, well, they're feeding pigs they're putting trash in pig feed. They're putting trash in pig feed. That's what happens, is they're putting this trash in there. Guys, they're not putting fucking trash in pig feed. They're not going and grabbing scraps of trash and throwing it in pig feed. That is just like, I just can't even believe that that is even a thing. And I know it was probably because that guy didn't take those wrappers off that bakery product, and it looks like. But I'm going to tell you, that's not what happens. They're not going to feed trash to animals. It's just not going to happen. So it's pretty basic. Corn, it's like Dad said, corn, soybean, salt. I mean, we sell all this corn, especially around here, to all these hog feeders. I mean, that is what it's made up of.
Yeah, but what's really interesting about that is, you know, you talk about, let's talk about the good old days. So the good old days, part of the reason, so when you see a lot of just memes or cartoons or whatever of a pig, and the traditional notion of a pig is a pig in the mud, and they'll eat anything. They're a scavenger. And so, like, when my dad was a kid, way, way back, that's what you fed your pigs. Like, you didn't have a balanced diet. When my dad started raising pigs in the 50s, there was no nutrition, vitamin pack. You literally fed pigs shelled corn, and then you got to where they could grind it. And, well, let's go back even further. It used to be that they didn't have a way to shell corn, so they had what they called an ear slicer, and you'd take ear corn, and it would slice it into little chunks, and you fed that to the pigs. And then the only protein source they had was you went to the local butcher shop, and you got meat scraps. And you had two barrels, two feeders. You fed pigs shelled corn and meat scraps, and that was it. Because there was no diet. And a lot of people that raise pigs in their backyard, they just fed them the leftover dinner, what you had for dinner, or your scraps from your vegetables, cleaning your vegetables, corn cobs, and whatever. So the idea that you fed pigs trash, that's what they did back long ago. But today they feed a very specialized diet, because you want those, you're feeding for optimal growth, and you're feeding for meat quality,
and you can't optimal do that. Flavor.
Yep, and you can't do that
feeding random shit.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's got to be measurable. It's just like a bodybuilder eating chicken and rice, and he's being on point with his diet because he knows he needs to be at a certain size or whatever for a certain look for his physique. Like, it has to be trackable. You can't just throw bakery in there and throw bread in there and do all that shit and raise an analytical group of pigs, because there's so you keep things simple, you keep things the same, so it's not as, there's not a bunch of variables thrown around. And so, yeah, that's there. We actually want to go to the feed mill that we get all our feed from and show you guys the whole entire process of that and what goes into pig feed, because I think that's kind of a trending topic when it comes to hog farming right now. And I would love to go in there and just show you what actually happens on our YouTube channel, This Will Do Farm, and just show you from the feed mill all the way to our feed bin to the feeder that the pigs eat out of on our farm, just to show you guys that, because there's a lot of bullshit surrounding that subject, I think. So Alex asks, looking for a skid loader, only have $15,000 to spend. What do we recommend?
Good luck. Yeah. Good luck, because equipment is high. Man, equipment is high priced. So really, I mean, brand-wise, there's some obvious choices that everybody would go to. Deer, New Holland, Case. I mean, if you can find a decent hour Case 1845C, has a Cummins in it. They sold thousands of them. So when I was doing buildings, we had a concrete contractor, and he literally, I bet you he had eight at one point, 1845Cs. And if there was one coming up on an auction somewhere, he would try to buy it, because in his mind, that was the best skid loader, easiest to work on, that, you know, they made, and he knew how to fix everything on them. And so that was, he would buy them anytime. But as you're thinking about it, to me, the first thing I think of when I'm looking at a piece of equipment is, can I work on it? And can I get parts for it? And if I can't work on it, how close is the nearest guy that can work on it? Whether that's a local shop that does a lot of that kind of stuff, or whether I'm looking for a dealer. Okay, well, if you're going to go down that road, for most places in the Midwest, or where you're, any place that you're farming, deer's going to be right in there. Now, trying to find, you know, an old, a 260 deer, you probably are right in there. You can probably go find an old 260, 280 deer, and that's a pretty simple machine to work on. The early 320s, they had problems with the water pumps. They put an aluminum water pump on a cast iron block, or vice versa. It was either an aluminum, maybe it was an aluminum block, and they put a cast iron steel water pump. I can't remember which. Anyway, because I had one, and it got converted because it went bad. But if that's your budget, you're definitely looking at something that you're probably going to have to work on. So find something that you know something about, or talk to people that have worked on them, and that would be my biggest criteria. And just know that in the environment we're in right now, you're probably going to overpay, but you're going to overpay for everything. That's the best advice I can give.
Yeah, I don't have much advice, just because I don't know much. I'm not an equipment guru, so I just know we got two, and they do good, and I love using them and get shit done with them. And
yeah,
I mean, we're lucky we haven't had a ton of maintenance, I feel like, on our skid loaders. But
no,
and they're handy as shit, I'll just say. Are really nice to have. You can do a lot of stuff with them, so definitely worth it if you can get one for the right price.
Hey, thanks for sticking with us. If you ever wanted to know what we do the rest of our time, come on over to our YouTube channel, This'll Do Farm, and tell us that you came from Barn Talk. We appreciate every one of you. Now let's get back to it. Joe asks, would love to get your eyes' opinion on regenerative ag and operations like White Oak Pastures, who are doing it at scale. Mm. I love this question. Go.
Yeah. I've been aware of White Oak Pastures for a little bit now. I actually listened to the Joe Rogan podcast with the founder and, you know, ultimate operator of White Oak Pastures. I actually forget his name. I should know his name, but I don't. And first thing I would say about White Oak Pastures and the man that started it all, I would say I respect him for his, exactly what we talked about. He has done a phenomenal job at creating a market for his product. He's done a phenomenal job of kind of vertically integrating everything on his own farm. He has his own butcher shop there. He does a great job of telling the story of what he's doing on his farm. And I wish him nothing but success. And I applaud him for that, because I think no matter where you are and how you're farming, we can all look at what White Oak Pastures is doing and say, they're doing a great job at not being a commodity. They have figured out that they are controlling their own destiny, and we should all strive to be there someday. And we should all strive to kind of, you know, they've done a really good job at that, and I respect them for it.
Will Harris.
Will Harris. Yep, that's his name. Will Harris is the guy behind White Oak Pastures, and got to give him credit for that. Definitely 100% give him credit on that. But what I have a hard time wrapping my head around, and we've talked about it on this podcast before, and we talked about it actually on the last episode a little bit, people got really pissed at me for saying you can't have regenerative agriculture everywhere. And people are like, of course you'd say that, because you're feeding pigs the way you've been feeding them. You're biased. You don't know shit. You should listen to these guys. I have listened to these guys. And like I said, I don't hate everything that they're doing. Like Will, I think he's done a great job with everything I just said previous. But the idea that his practices that he can do in Georgia are going to work and fit our landscape here in Southeast Iowa is unreasonable to think. We cannot do what White Oak Pastures is doing here where we're at geographically in Southeast Iowa. It just doesn't work. Our temperature, our weather, our winters are way more harsh than they are in Georgia. Our landscape as far as soil, the amount of woodlots, amount of forest, the amount of pasture we have here is very limited. And one thing about White Oak Pastures that I don't think is really talked about is they don't have any crop production. It's all livestock. So he is importing all of that corn and all that feed for all those animals is getting imported. Besides the cows, I think they're all grass-fed, but everything else is getting fed a grain-fed diet because they have to. So, and where do you think that comes from? States and farms like ours where we have corn and soybeans, and he probably feeds non-GMO, whatever. But you got to have crop production somewhere. And Dad actually has some really good statistics on the difference between a White Oak Pastures and a farm like ours, and why the idea that we can have regenerative everywhere and we can still feed the same amount of people that we're feeding now, like they want to say that, and it sounds good, and they can say it because they know damn well that that can't happen. And one, like on Joe's podcast, Joe straight up asked him that, and his answer was, well, I'm not really necessarily worried about that. I'm worried about, are we going to run out of water before those guys run out of water? Talking about industrial agriculture. Are we going to run out of energy before those guys, industrial agriculture? And he was like, probably not, because we're more sustainable, quote unquote, right? That's what his argument was. He kind of glazed over the fact that, hey, are we going to still be able to feed all the people we're feeding if everybody went regenerative? And he really didn't answer the question, because I think we all know that that's not going to happen. That cannot happen unless the population collapsed or the Black Plague came and we knocked out a lot of the population. Then maybe you can go back and everybody can have a regenerative system. But with the population we have now and the numbers we have now, it's simply not possible, guys. And I'm not hating. I'm not hating on those guys for doing what they're doing, because I think that it fits them well. It fits him because he's in Georgia. He can do that. He can have his livestock outside all year round and have very limited cold weather and shitty weather for animals. And he's got plenty of pasture and woodlots to do it at. Good for him. But you can't take that system and apply it everywhere. It's not possible. It's not possible. It doesn't make sense. And we wouldn't be able to feed the amount of people that we're feeding now. Dad, go ahead with the statistics.
When I saw that question, the part that stuck to me was he said, like White Oak Pastures that are doing it at scale. And I said, oh, I haven't really done a lot of research. I saw the Rogan podcast and heard him talk about all he's doing. But I was like, well, what scale as far as me as a hog producer? So I searched through looking for articles talking about how many animals they actually raise. And I saw that he threw out this number, like that he had like 80 some thousand animals on that farm at any given time. And I was like, okay, well, that's scale. So I found an article and I'm just going to read it to you. It says, on any given day, White Oak Pastures is home to 8 acres of vegetables, an entire pasture devoted to composting, and at least 72,000 chickens being raised for meat, 9,000 egg-laying chickens, 3,000 ducks, 2,000 guineas, 2,500 geese. Now we get to the real meat production. 1,000 sheep, 1,000 goats, 700 cows, 100 hogs, 100 rabbits, 200 turkeys. And I went, okay. So 100 hogs, that is not scale. And the other thing is,
well, that is, it's impressive that he's able to do all that. It is impressive, but Yeah, go ahead. For hogs, like, I don't think that he could probably take the same 2,000 pigs and put across that whole property.
Right.
And that's all he could do is just 2,000 pigs if he wanted to do pigs at scale. Right. But it's probably makes sense for White Oak Pastures to not do that.
Right.
Because they know that they would have to dedicate to one animal. And that doesn't make sense for their for their system and what they're doing as far as brand wise and market. So I understand that.
So for a little bit of perspective, they own from the articles I've read and what I've seen, they own themselves about 3,200 acres down there, and then they rent or lease the rest of it. So they have about 5,000 acres. Okay, come up here to the Midwest. Come to Southeast Iowa. A section in a county. So you have a county, and then you have within that county, you have townships. And in Washington County, you have, what is that? 4, 8, 12 or 3, 6, 9. I don't know if you have nine townships or 12 townships. I don't know why I can't remember that off the top of my head. I want to say it's 12. I want to say you have three rows of four townships. And a township is roughly 23,000 acres. So then the township is divided by sections. Each section is about 640 acres, depending on whether there's something funky that runs through it, that it gets a corner cut off, added to another section, whatever. But 640 acres. So your 5,000 acres is roughly just shy of eight sections. So I got out the old Google Maps last night, and I thought, okay, in eight sections, what do we produce here? So, and you could pick if you use us as the anchor point of the sections and you go around us, you're going to come up with about 22 to 28, 2,400 head finishing buildings. So if you have 20 2,400 head finishing buildings, that is 48,000 pig spaces times two is 96,000. So roughly we raise in the same area over 100,000 fat hogs a year. And then within that, there are, I don't know this as well, but you've got at least five or six guys that are raising cattle. And part of those are in pasture, part of those are in what we'd call dirt lot, and part of them are in what you'd call open front cattle shed confinement. But near as I could figure, you've probably got, let's say 3,000, and you're not going to turn that a full two times a year, but you're probably about 5,000 head of fat cattle that you're going to raise in a year. And then if you have, out of that 5,000 acres, we're going to say that, let's say you only get 4,000 acres of tillable land, which in our area, it's more than that because it's mostly farmland. And that's the other thing. That 100,000 head of pigs and the 5,000 head of cattle, that's raised you're taking up very little ground. You're taking up very little out of that production of corn and soybeans and whatever. So say you got 4,000 acres of ground and you do half of it corn, half of it beans, and corn makes 200 bushel the acre. I don't know. I can't do the math off the top of my head. It's a bunch. And the beans make 70 bushel. You can figure out pretty fast. So as far as the number of people that are being fed off of 5,000 acres, I don't know. I don't know whether you can say that what he's doing is at scale, because what we're doing here and what our neighbors are doing here, that's scale. And as far as regenerative, I don't know. I go back to this all the time. So our farm here, we raise the hogs. We use the manure for fertilizer. We raise the corn and the beans. The corn and the beans go to the feed mill, get milled into feed to feed the next generation of animals. We no-till. We got solar on our hog buildings. And I'm not going to get into it today, but we're going down a path that we're going to talk about here at a later date, that I will put up our system as far as the amount of energy it takes, the amount of resources that we're using per pound and per bushel. We have the most efficient food production system in the world.
We will. If this...
Well, I think we do now.
Yeah.
I think that's... There's no place in the world that you can raise a crop or a pound of pork more economically than you can in Southeast Iowa.
Just yeah. Can. Well, and I think we'll be more sustainable too.
No, we definitely will be.
We will be. We're talking with a company that's doing some really cool things, specifically to animal agriculture, but hog production, and what they got can really change the whole landscape of sustainability in hog production. And the narrative that raising pigs on pasture is more sustainable for the environment, I think, is going to halt. And it's going to go the opposite way, because everybody wants to talk about carbon and sequestering carbon and what's your carbon footprint. Well, what these guys are doing is going to...
Be very disruptive.
And these hog barns and these hog farms with hog barns on them might end up being carbon negative, and we might be able to reduce our carbon footprint so much that we can produce a carbon negative product and our carbon footprint is nothing. So that would be really, really exciting. But all I'll say to wrap it up is I think what he's doing is awesome. I think how he's doing it as far as showing people and letting people see his farm, we need more of that across the whole landscape of agriculture, and all livestock farmers need to be as open as they are about things. How he's marketed his own product, I cannot hate on that. I respect the shit out of that. And he seems like a pretty good guy on Joe's podcast, but we just don't see eye to eye when it comes to saying regenerative can work everywhere and we're going to be able to feed all the people we're feeding now on an 100% regenerative system. And the idea that they are way more sustainable than us and that we're hurting the environment and they're not hurting the environment at all, that argument I don't think has been researched enough. And I think with new technology coming into what we do every day, that narrative is going to quickly fade away because of the technology that is coming. So that's all I'll say about it. And I'm glad that we're able to feed all the people that we do. And I think you can have regenerative guys, and I think you can have guys like us that raise pigs in a hog barn, and that's what makes this country great. You got options, and I'm just glad that we can feed all the people that we can feed in this world. I'm glad that most people in the world have food to eat, and that's a good, and I'm especially happy that just about most Americans have food to eat. So, and that's because of the food system and the production agriculture we have today. So
there's room for everybody.
There is room for everybody.
We don't have to paint everybody with one brush.
Yeah. At the end of the day, what Dad and I just can't stand is when people want to paint us with a broad brush and say, just because White Oak Pastures is doing that in Georgia, why can't you do it here in Southeast Iowa? You're a piece of shit the way you farm. You need to do it like White Oak Pastures, when you don't have a fucking clue. You have no idea. You're just saying that because you saw a video from White Oak Pastures or saw an interview, when you have no idea about the details of what goes into our farming operation, why we do what we do, and why we do what we do because where we are located. And you have no idea the amount of production we have here. And you have no idea how sustainable we truly are. And so that's what pisses us off. But yes, you can have everybody. We don't need to paint everybody with a broad brush. And I will just say it one last time. I respect Will, and is it Will?
Yep.
I respect Will, and I respect White Oak Pastures for what they're doing, and we can have everybody, and everybody can choose to do what they want to do, and that's how I feel about it. Brett asks, how do you decide what breed of pigs to raise?
Well, a semi comes.
Drops them off.
They open the door, they run them off, and we're like, these are the pigs that we're going to raise. I know that's not the answer that you're looking for. So today, there is an incredible amount of technology that goes into the genetics companies that are working on crossbreeding pigs, making a better animal, a better pork chop. And so, you know, years ago, if I can find the picture, we'll throw it in here. I've got a great picture of my dad kneeled down next to a sow in this barn farrowing, and she was a Poland China Tamworth cross. And if you see that picture, that sow looks more like a wild hog that you would find today on a hog hunt down in Texas than it does a sow used in production agriculture. Tamworth is not even a breed that is around. I'm sure there is some heritage brand person that has got a Tamworth, but that breed of hog was favored at the time in the 40s and the 50s because lard, you got to remember, seed oils did not start production in the United States at any scale until, the early 70s, maybe? Something like that. So pretty much everything that your grandparents and great-grandparents cooked got fried in lard.
Or butter.
Or both. And I think Crisco was the first, I think Crisco might even be, I don't know what it's made out of. It might be made out of petroleum. I don't know what it's made out of. But Crisco was the first, shortening that wasn't animal-based. So the Tamworth, they had a good, you see a pork chop that has, 3/8 of an inch of fat on it? A Tamworth sow would have, an inch and a quarter of back fat. Because lard was the number one seller. That was the moneymaker for these packers. They sold barrels and barrels and barrels of lard because everybody fried in it. Everybody cooked in it.
Isn't it funny that we're starting to see a trend of people that are going back to that?
Yeah.
They're realizing the seed oils are pretty much the devil.
Oh, terrible.
And butter and... I'm not saying all seed oils. I mean, avocado oil.
Olive oil. Everything else is trash. Pretty much.
And then lard. Beef tallow. You know.
Beef tallow, lard, butter, bacon fat.
Yep. It's kind of heading backward. It's kind of heading back to that now because people are realizing that shit's terrible for you. So.
Well, let's just, I've still got that thought, but this is just a good jumping off point. You can't trust if anybody's trying to sell you something, chances are there's a reason they're selling it, and they may or may not be totally honest. I'm going to totally come right back to it, but I got to get my digs in. Did anybody see a week ago the FDA came out and said, ivermectin? Gosh dang. Funny story. Yeah, we're okay with that. You can use ivermectin to treat COVID. I don't know. I mean... No harm, no foul. I know we ridiculed the shit out of everybody and made you into a monster and said that you were an idiot and that, you know, if you were a doctor, we would try to get your license pulled if you prescribed to anybody. But hey, that's all water under the bridge. We did a little looking and come to find out, yeah, we're okay with it. So that tells you right there. I mean, that's a prime example. But the whole kick, if you go back, seed oils. Oh, you don't want to fry in lard. You don't want to use butter. You want to use margarine, and you want to use corn oil, soybean oil, Canola oil is rapeseed oil, but rapeseed, that doesn't sound very good. So we changed the name to canola oil. This is way better. This is what you got to do. No, this is way more profitable. This is super cheap. Why is all fast food fried in seed oil? Because it's super cheap. And if you want something premium is like Chick-fil-A uses, I think they use peanut oil to fry theirs. Peanut oil is the premium seed oil. It's still a seed oil, though. It's not very good for you. But all, you know, for decades, we've been told, oh, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. And now then you're seeing cracks in the armor, and we have all of these health issues that we didn't have, and a million excuses have come up, and we're starting to figure out it might be all the shit that we eat that's fried or has seed oil in it.
Processed.
I'm not an expert. Do your own research. But anyway, getting back to the breeds. So anyway, the Tamworth, shitload of back fat. And then we moved away from that, and lard quit selling, and we started moving into using margarine, shortening, seed oils. And so then we didn't want that, so the breed went away. And then we had where you were using a lot of Poland, China, Duroc, Hampshire, and you had Hamp, Duroc, sow. So you were using a colored sow and a colored boar. Well, the growth rate was really good, but the meat quality wasn't as good, and the litter size wasn't as good. So your white breeds, your large white, your Landrace, Chester white even, those breeds had better maternal qualities. So that's why for years and years, the standard cross, I guess, was you would have a white sow, like a York Landrace cross, and then you would use a Hampshire boar or a Duroc boar. And Hamp really took over because it was the fastest growing combination. Today, we're moving more towards the Duroc because the Duroc has better meat quality. I don't know where it'll go in the future, but the two big takeaways, the people that are working on genetic improvement is on the one hand, mothering ability, because you want a sow that when she farrows that litter, she does a good job, produces a lot of milk, and helps those pigs grow. And on the meat side, we want meat quality, but we want a pig that will grow quickly, because every day that they're on feed and somebody is paying for the space to finish that pig, and every day to market is costing you. So that is a really high view of what goes into picking the genetics you use. But the consumer votes, and the hog business, I think most pork producers would tell you that pork, the other white meat, was the dumbest plan that we ever came up with, because we thought instead of competing with the most expensive meat and trying to make pork like beef and make it marbled, because nobody gives a shit when they go to the grocery store and buy a steak. They don't care what. If you want a steak, you don't care what it costs. You're just going to go buy a steak. So instead of competing against that, we decided, let's go get the cheapest protein source there is, which is a chicken breast, which is trash. I only eat chicken thighs pretty much because at least they have a little bit of flavor. We're going to compete with that. So we're going to try to make pork ultra lean. And that's what we did. And then guess what? It tasted like shit. So now then, we finally figured out, we need to get some marbling in this. So today, we're moving a lot more towards meat quality.
And taste.
And taste.
Flavor.
And that's where we need to be.
Yep.
So
that's where I am at, too. I don't know why we moved that direction, but I hope that, I really want to optimize pork for flavor. Because that's what truly matters. The consumer matters. Ear to the ground. What do people want? They want good tasting pork. Let's give it to them. Genetics, nutrition, everything. Let's tailor it towards that.
This is a really good deal. You had a rant. I had a rant. We still answered the question. Man, we're on a roll.
That's barn talk, baby.
There you go. That's barn talk.
Seth asks, do we have our own garden?
Oh, yeah. Do you got a garden?
I don't have a garden. I have a garden by my house. Yeah. That's your guys' garden.
Yeah. We have a garden. This year hasn't been a good year. We have spaghetti squash, jalapenos, red peppers, green peppers, tomatoes, and one cucumber plant. Only plant one. Anybody that is gardening knows, anybody that's not gardening that likes cucumbers, don't fall into the trap that, oh, I love cucumbers, I'm going to plant, you know, 3, 4, 5 of them, because you'll wish you wouldn't. I'll tell you a good quick story. I had a guy that I used to work with, never gardened before. Him and his wife, you know, they've been married a few years, and, you know, you get to the point, you're like, we should have a garden. And love cucumbers. Both of them love cucumbers. So none of us that worked with him knew that they decided they were going to plant this garden. And he comes into work one day, and he has a 5-gallon bucket of cucumbers. And he's like, hey, anybody want cucumbers? And there was a few people around the office like, oh, yeah, I'll take a cucumber too. So then like 2 days later, he's back. He's got 2 5-gallon buckets of cucumbers. He's like, anybody want cucumbers? And people are like, no, not really. I got plenty. And he's like, no, so you just really got to take these cucumbers. And I'm like, no, we don't. I'm like, how many cucumbers do you got? And he's like, well, I didn't know how many you got. And my wife and I, we planted 15 of them.
Holy
and
shit.
After that, they were just taking 5-gallon buckets of cucumbers and just dumping them in the ditch, because a cucumber plant will produce an insane amount of cucumbers. And let's face it, you know, you have cucumber salad and it's like first time in the summer and you're like, oh, this is just so great. And then then you're like, eh, not so much. And then you're like, I can't eat another freaking cucumber. So, yeah. But, yeah, it hasn't been a good year for the tomatoes. Our tomato plants have been, I don't know what it is. For one thing, we raise them in, we have a raised bed garden. Basically, we use stock tanks. We got a bunch of old stock tanks that we used, and it works really good. I don't like bending over, so it works really good for us. But this year, it's been so dry. I mean, we basically watered every day for a while. There was only a handful of times that we got any rain that you didn't have to just water every day. So,
what about, you got a good story about the Amish and potatoes?
I don't know. Should I tell that?
Yeah.
We don't have a lot of Amish listeners. So, the guys that build all our sheds probably aren't listening. I can't take credit for this. This is why it's always good to go to a trade show, because the quality of content that you get and the stories you get from people. But an old hog farmer told me this joke. He said, we were talking about potatoes, and he said, or we were talking about gardening and talking about potatoes, and he's like, oh, yeah. He goes, I got some Amish that are my neighbors, and these two Amish ladies are out working in the garden digging potatoes. And all he says to Mary, she says, Mary, these two potatoes, they remind me of my husband's testicles. And Mary goes, oh, my gosh, they're that big? And she goes, no, they're that damn dirty. I have probably told that joke, I don't know how many times I've told it. It's still funny. So if you're Amish, you shouldn't be listening to this, but I'm sorry for offending you.
No, I thought, you know, we're just playing.
Seth asked about investing in precious metals. He asked what our opinion of it was, and that's why I threw it into the market update. And I will just tell you, I don't invest in precious metals, and I probably would have been more likely to invest in it at the start of Barn Talk than I am today. And the reason is because when we started this and we started doing the market update, I always threw in gold and silver, had it in there. We've had it in there for out of the 90 plus episodes that we've done, every market update for the most part had it in there. And then I noticed a trend. They don't change much. So everybody thought that when the economy got overheated and we thought we were headed into a recession, and we are in a recession, and, you know, the housing bubble in 2008 and all this stuff, gold's $1,833 or something, $1,933, I gotta look. Gold, $1,933. So it's up, it's gone up, because it was at 1,800 and something. But silver, as far back as I can remember, silver was $14. The highest I've ever seen it, I want to say, is like $23. And let's ask yourself, I mean, you got to ask yourself. People say, oh yeah, if the world goes to hell, you know, you got gold. Bullshit. If the world goes to hell, you better have a gun and a hell of a lot of ammo and
some shit to trade with.
And some shit to trade with, because
bartering.
You can't eat gold, and I don't know what you're going to do with it. So I guess you're hoping for a very mild economic collapse where you can still actually buy shit and the dollar's gone and you can use gold. I don't know. But I'm not a big fan of precious metals anymore. And there's all kinds of guys. Every time there's any kind of economic thing, there's somebody that's a gold bug or a silver guy that's like, oh, you need to buy silver. You know, they're selling it because they're being paid to sell it. And I don't think it's not going to zero. So if you believe the dollar is going to zero, the value of gold, the value of silver, not going to zero. But you can't use it. So maybe it's something you hold in reserve that for when the economy starts to come back and think, if you really think you're good and you're going to make it through all the chaos and then we're going to get through it, gold might be worth a lot then. But when people are running around seeing if you got any canned goods, gold's probably not. For that situation of the apocalypse, gold is not the thing, or silver. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I don't dabble. I don't dabble. I think Bitcoin's kind of the new digital gold for people.
Yeah, I think it is.
It's a store of value. Everybody wants to say it's store of value. Gold and silver, store of value. Well, Bitcoin's kind of a store of value too. And there's going to be some people that hate that answer, but it's just how I think. So
Bitcoin is the non-MEP or non-EMP store of value, and gold is the EMP store of value.
Yeah, it's just like, what's the rate of return on gold? What's the cash flow on gold?
Yeah.
Not much. Rate of return on real estate, rate of return on a business, rate of return cash flow on those things. Rate of return on even the stock market is probably a little bit better. I don't know. I'm just not going to dabble in that. I'm not going to put my money in gold unless I had absolute fuck you money. I guess maybe you buy a little gold just to be safe. I don't know.
Diversify
a little bit. But other than that, I don't need to touch it.
I just shot a little video this morning when I was walking because I was thinking about that. And I don't have any money right now because it's August. And so that, you know, if you're a farmer out there, August is the worst month of the year because you're out of money. You didn't plan ahead and you either didn't market your crop right or you sold it too soon and then you maxed out your operating line. So you're just trying to scrape by. I was just picking up cans this morning, so I don't have money to buy Bitcoin or gold. So
right there with you.
Yep.
Right there with you.
So my money's all invested right here.
Right here.
Right.
It's all on you guys.
Pretty much.
Well, I think that's going to wrap it up, guys. That's all we got for today's show. If you got any value, if you related to us, if we made you laugh, if we answered your question, please share the show. Pay the fee. Leave a review on Spotify or Apple. Submit your questions at barntalkshow@gmail.com. I think next week episode we'll have hot topics, or we might have a guest if we can find one. If RFK Jr. gets back to us, we'll have him on next week, but I don't know if he will.
I sent him an email, and I, you know, told him all the reasons why Barn Talk would be awesome, and for somehow, some way, they took that as I wanted to donate. So every email I've gotten back from him is just giving me ways that I can donate money. I don't know, maybe I wasn't clear enough.
Yeah, I think you'd get that with just about any candidate, would you?
Maybe I'll try again.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, so maybe that will happen someday. Hit him up. Hit him up on Twitter. Hit him up on Instagram. Hit him up on TikTok. Tell him to get on Barn Talk, and we'd love to have him on and have a discussion. But other than that, we'll see you guys back here next week for another episode. We love you. See you later.